Whatever you think of the politics of Barack Obama, think about it. What woman in America wasn't interested in seeing and hearing Michelle Obama last night at the Democratic National Convention? Think about her experience for the last 8 years. A first lady, having given up a lucrative career in healthcare, having two girls to raise through their most difficult years.
I will never forget that winter morning as I watched our girls, just 7 and 10 years old, pile into those black SUVs with all those big men with guns. And I saw their little faces pressed up against the window. And the only thing I could think was, what have we done?
Who can't relate to that? Michelle Obama's role as a mentor came naturally, and it was one she took on everywhere she went. In 2009, she spoke at the Elizabeth Garrett Anderson School, an all-girls school at the underserved community of Islington in North London, England.
All of you are jewels. You are precious, and you touch my heart. And it is important for the world to know that there are wonderful girls like you all over the world.
She's all in there. Mrs. Obama continued to stay in touch with those girls who were inspired by her words and found success in their later studies. Sentiments found in this year's commencement address at City College of New York.
When I wake up in a house that was built by slaves, and I watch my daughters, two beautiful black young women, head off to school, waving goodbye to their father, the President of the United States, the son of a man from Kenya who came here to America for the same reasons as many of you.
Michelle borrowed that line from one of her earlier speeches in her speech last night, but nobody called it plagiarism. Nope. Kate Anderson Brower joins us, author of First Women, The Grace and Power of America's Modern First Ladies. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for having me.
This Michelle Obama narrative of, I can't get this image of waking up in a house built by slaves and watching their daughters go off to school. I mean, she has a perspective like no other that's even deeper, it seems to me, than Barack Obama's perspective in some level.
It reminded me a little bit about Rosalind Carter when she said something similar. She remembered watching their daughter Amy put on a bulletproof vest when they were on a tour in Italy after some violence had erupted there. And this was, of course, in the 70s. And she talked about watching her daughter put on this bulletproof vest. And she had the exact same sentiment of, you know, what have we done? And I think that Michelle Obama is able to verbalize that in, like you said, a very relatable way. I was really surprised that she was emotional last night. I mean, her relationship with Hillary has been kind of fraught. Of course, the 2008 campaign was very hard fought, but I really believe that she's moved past that. And clearly last night, I mean, she was the only one who was able to get the chorus of Sanders people to sort of not say anything. And it was you could hear a pin drop. And I thought that was incredible.
Do you think that's partly because she is so relieved that this is sort of her swan song and now we have her legacy to look at?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, when I was working on my book, friends of the Obamas would tell me how miserable she was in the White House. Not that she recognizes the incredible opportunity she has there as the first African-American first lady, but they said that she also feels particularly scrutinized because of that at the same time.
And it's just not her thing. I mean, that's what people describe. It's not like she's got some problem with the White House. It's just totally not her thing.
Right. And I mean, people forget that she was the breadwinner in that family for a long time when Barack Obama was in the state legislature. So she wants to work. And one of her friends said, you know, it's really difficult. It was hard for her to give up her career and move to Washington, give up her friends. I mean, convincing her mother to come with her to the White House was a big ask. And her mom was very reluctant. But that's really helped her daughters and given them a sense of normalcy. Last night, I mean, it was incredible to see her really take Donald Trump to task without ever mentioning his name. And that was kind of brilliant.
And so classy, not to mention anything with the Melania. I mean, a lot of us talked about that in the newsrooms, but not a peep.
No, I was wondering if she would make some quip, you know, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery or something like that. But, you know, I thought she probably wouldn't, because also I do think that this is very personal for her with when it comes to Donald Trump, particularly because of, and she mentioned it last night, his questioning her husband's citizenship. I think that for her, this is the most personal campaign. It's certainly different from 2012, where Mitt Romney was an entirely different candidate. And this has really sparked something in her that was incredible to watch.
The Joining Forces initiative out of the First Lady's office has really been a vital program for veterans and their families. But it seems also that she identifies with what those families are going through, in that there is a male member of the family or female member of the family going through a particular stress. And, you know, Joining Forces is all about rallying the troops within your family in a difficult situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, because she describes her life as a single mother at some points, you know, I mean, that she understands what it's like to parent alone because her husband was gone so often, and to try to make things work. And she often says, you know, it takes a village, going back to what Hillary Clinton famously said. But I think she relates to the women and the men who stay behind when their spouses are far away and in danger, you know. And I also think it was very powerful to watch her and Jill Biden with the Military Family Initiative really talk about how a lot of Americans don't know anyone in the military now. And she said herself, she didn't know anyone serving. And it's this whole segment of the population that I think she's done a lot to emphasize and to really bring put a spotlight on.
Well, that's a division in America we almost never talk about, but it's really, really important. Thinking about her Let's Move campaign, her fitness campaign, comes directly out of reports we used to hear about how she tried to strictly regulate the diet of her two daughters. And boom, it's been very successful as well.
Yeah, you know, I covered her for Bloomberg News when I was a White House reporter, and I talked to some, you know, executives at big food companies and then some lobbyists with the food industry. This was a very controversial campaign. I mean, most first ladies, they take up some apolitical campaign. And while on paper, most people would think that healthy eating is fairly apolitical, it really wasn't. I mean, she's been criticized as being the food police, but also she was fighting against these giant corporations. You know, fast food companies that have responded by offering now apple slices with Happy Meals and things like that. I mean, you can actually see some concrete evidence of stepping in the right direction. But her promise of ending childhood obesity in a generation is one that is unlikely to be met. But it's, again, it's, you know, first ladies have this incredible platform. And one first lady told me that, you know, no one will ever not take a call from a first lady. It is just, you have this incredible platform, and I think she's used it in a very innovative way.
Well, Kate Anderson Brower, author of First Women, The Grace and Power of America's Modern First Ladies, thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.